I've heard people say in terribly disappointed tones and so on, when the husband or the wife forgets a birthday, my God. It's one of the, what is it called? What kind of sin?
Venial.
Venial sin?
Venial sin.
Or the other one is what?
Mortal.
Ah, it's a mortal sin. Venial sin is like, you know, very little. That is, you stick a cigarette into your mouth and the husband doesn't immediately light a matchstick and help you.
Ah. It's actually strange, though, isn't it, that throughout, particularly the world, we can see a Hindu and St. Paul will take him too. But I mean, it seems that there is a very strong. I mean, women get always mentioned after the. You know, people can get to God who are sages and who are robbers and dacoits, and finally, oh yes, and ladies.
Yeah, yeah. That is only because, you know, you must read it with a little bit of more understanding. During the period when these things were written down, women had already been denigrated. But that does not mean that the basic tenets of the religion approved of it. It did not. Right? Into the Vedas and the Upanishads, the women are exalted. Contrary to the popular thing that became popular later, that women are not allowed to read the scriptures, the Upanishads mention tremendous women saints who could argue, debate. With men sages, then there are some practical problems. I don't know if you are following some sort of world news on these things. Yeah, right. Now the American women are fighting for equal rights. Just now, in India, it happened at least in India during independence, 30 years ago. Only today, American women are fighting for equal rights. Because even according to law, they are not equal. Right? They get less pay, they get this, they get that. And the establishment resists it because it is pointed out that there are certain natural disabilities. For instance, all days are not same to you, whereas 31 days are exactly the same one day after the other to me. And some days you might get a little more sick or exhibit peculiar symptoms, some kind of depression, some kind of, you know, moodiness. So on those days it is possible that you are less efficient than you would naturally otherwise be. Not you, you know, girls in general. And then there is this problem of pregnancy. No man has ever become pregnant so far. So that's pregnancy, childbirth, childbearing, and childbirth, and then looking after the babies for some time and all that. All those things impose a certain burden upon the woman, which is not shared by man. All the rest can be shared by man. You can make your husband cook or wash, you know, the dishes, and you can say that, well, I won't mention names, but I will give you the story. It was right in the very beginning of my encounter with what is called Western culture. I was staying with someone, a fairly aged couple. The first morning after my arrival, the lady knocked at the door and said, here is your breakfast. Thank you very much. And she went away. All the people, which meant three or four of us, All of us had our breakfast in bed. And the next morning, knock, 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 I said, come in. The husband comes in. Where is your breakfast, Swami? Funny. The next day, knock, 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 the wife comes in. The next day, knock, 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 the husband comes in. Later I learned that equal rights. So, they had it as a sort of duty that today it's your turn, tomorrow is my turn. Today, next day is your turn, my turn. Like that. So we share. So if you follow this principle, you can ask your husband to share in the domestic duties, all sorts of things. You can make him babysit, you can make him do this, you can make all, everything can be shared. But there are these basic things which cannot be shared. No, 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 I'm not talking about liberation at all. I'm not talking about liberation at all. As a matter of fact, there's no need for liberation. Mm-hmm, wait. And then, now, where, and also, this is another peculiar thing which I, for one, have really not understood completely and thoroughly. Why? Of the two who are responsible for the birth of a baby, the mother must be more attached than the father. Occasionally, I have also come across fathers who are terribly fond of their children, babies. But by and large, the mother might divorce the husband, throw him out or kill him, but not give up the baby. By and large, there are exceptions. I can easily give you a few exceptions. So, this is another problem. Now, you are tied down or weighed down by these natural factors and by your attachment to the children. Unfortunately, again, human babies are at a terrible disadvantage in comparison to animal babies. As I was saying the other day, I still feel that human being is much far lower in evolution than other animals. Whereas the other animals can let their young ones stray away from them days after their birth. The human baby has to be looked after for at least 10 years or more. For the first year or two, the baby is completely and totally dependent upon you. Then you can allow the baby to sort of, you know, nose around or crawl around independently, but still not. You're worried. At least I am worried. If the baby goes alone into the kitchen, you are worried about maybe he just pulls a tablecloth and the whole table comes upon him. Or he plugs his finger into a live wire socket. All sorts of things, fear. So that till about 10 years at least, you are totally tied down by that child. Now, therefore, someone said, okay, you don't have to go and, you know, struggle hard, work in on the fields or in offices and earn. I'll do all that. You look after the children. Quite simple. And it is also possible, I shouldn't be terribly generous to men folk, it's also possible that the man saw in this natural limitation, an opportunity. You are going to cook for the children, even if you don't want to cook for me. So, better become a good cook. You are going to wash the diapers of the babies, even if you don't want to wash my shirt. So, along with that, take mine too. learn to wash and iron and do all sorts of those things. And in return, I'll go and earn and work, earn and all that. Then, but there is a sneaking suspicion. Now I am at a disadvantage. You must observe this psychology very carefully and closely. I am at a terrible disadvantage. I am totally dependent upon you for my food and clothing. Gradually, I lose those talents, those faculties. I can't make a cup of tea with precision. A cup of tea prepared today may not be precisely what it was yesterday. Each day it is different. So, I am totally dependent upon you. Now, in order to clinch the issue and to ensure that you don't take advantage of that dependency, I managed to work out a few things. One, ostracize the woman who appears in public. Number one. So it becomes socially unacceptable for a woman to walk about and do things outside the home. And if I have anything to do with the legislation,
sure.
Right, turn the whole thing in my favor. I hold the property, I hold the rights of inheritance and all that. But I tell you, you are part of me, there's no problem. I'm not going to desert you, I'm not going to throw you out. Right. And that might be quite right too, possible too. And then there is still one more thing. I may prevent you from looking over my shoulder and doing something else, or abandoning me and going to work. But you may still go into the puja room or meditation room when I want a cup of tea or when I want some food or things like that. So they said, never mind, you serve the husband and that itself will earn for you a seat in heaven. After all, what is this other fellow doing? Why doing that for? He is doing his puja, his meditation and all that in order that he may go to heaven. I guarantee that merely serving your husband will take you to heaven. So that's also guaranteed. You don't go away to the puja room or meditation room abandoning the man. That's all. That's how it works. But it looks as though initially this division of labor was fairly viable and also sensible. As long as the man recognized the equal importance of woman in his life. And I have seen both. I have seen both the good and the not so good in this context. I have seen some very good examples of wise division of labor. You go and ask that man, how old is your daughter? He says, no, I ask my wife. He steps into the house. Afterwards, it's the wife. He doesn't know anything in the house. He doesn't know anything that goes on in the family. He doesn't know anything that happens in the kitchen. No, nothing. All that is her responsibility. He's our son. What is he going to do? Ask my wife. Is he going to become an engineer, doctor? Ask my wife. I don't know anything. When is your daughter getting married? Ask my wife. How do you get your money and how much is revenue your land is bringing and so on? Oh, I'll tell you. All that. You ask her, she says no. Ask my husband. How much money is he bringing? Ask my husband. And once the money is brought in, it is handed over to the wife. She runs the show. And then the husband has to go and beg. Incidentally, that one such scene put me off this thing called marriage in India. I was about 10 or 12, I think, at that time. And in the house, in the village, I had a large room for my study. And I was there constantly. I didn't come out normally, except for meals and for going to school. That door always remained closed. Exactly the same dimensions as this room. And one day, I don't know why I came out. It was mid-morning. I think it was Sunday. I'd finished doing something, homework. I opened the door and stepped out. And I saw this. My uncle's daughter, she was about 20 at that time, was standing there, and in front of her, the husband. He was about 24, 25. He had 10 days growth of beard. And he was a teacher, school teacher, that man. And he was standing in front of her and said, I'd like to have a shave. In those days, there was no self-shaving. One had to go to the barber, even for shaving the face. So, I would like to go to the barber, give me some money. Not now, next week. All right. I looked at it, my God. This fellow goes to work, to the school, and works hard there, at least 6 hours a day, and brings in the money. Immediately he comes home, the money is handed to the wife, and for 2 cents, barber's fee, he has to go and beg of his wife? Not me, is it? No way I can do that. Then and there I decided, no, this is not for me. But that was the system, where each one respected the other, each one loved the other, each one then it need to work very nicely, beautifully.
So it's like the wife serves the husband too. And the husband serves the wife.
Exactly, precisely. Precisely. But without this kind of contractual agreement that one day you prepare the breakfast and the one day I prepare the breakfast. That's sort of rigid thing. There's no spontaneity in that. That is how it must have. And then, in the meantime, of course, there are good husbands and bad wives and bad husbands and good wives and all sorts of things. And then the whole thing gets haywire. And then every time you begin to solve the problem, you complicate it. You have an alcoholic for a husband. Right, it's a very unpleasant thing to live with an alcoholic husband. Quite right. What are you going to do? It's one of those things, right? It's one of those things. And the Hindu attitude to begin with was, never mind, he's an alcoholic, still he is God, worship him. And if you grumble, why me? They say, it's your karma. Right, you don't accept that as a wise policy. Okay, now, today, even a Hindu wife can do what you would do. He's an alcoholic, dump him, divorced. All right. Then what are you going to do now? Let's say you are about 35 or 40 and you have divorced your husband. He's an alcoholic. For that alcoholic, observe this very carefully. Then you will see all sorts of fun. That alcoholic feels abandoned, naturally. And since you have added one more problem to him, he is going more frequently, that much frequently, to the pub. Yes? He was having that problem, this problem, this problem. Three problems. So, he took to drinks. Now you have added one more, or two more, or three more. How many more, I don't know. Because one doesn't know whether he knows how to cook and manage himself by himself. Everything is a problem now. And so, he goes to the bottle even more frequently. And visualize this. When clutching a bottle and sitting like this. Outside his house or maybe in a park nearby. Now, there is a woman who for some unknown reason has remained unmarried till she was 30. It just so happened that she is not married. And she walks past this man, 40 years old, looks at him. And the first thing is pity. Oh, poor thing. Hey, who are you? You can imagine the sequel, yes? Out of sympathy, she says, all right, never mind, I'll look after you. She's a dirty woman who's gone. Then somebody else gets married to this man. Karma again. Karma or compassion, whatever it is. And then this other woman who has divorced him, who goes away, she's got the custody of two or three children. She can't manage. She has to go to work, she has to look after the children, all sorts of things. Either she herself takes to drink, God forbid, or get into some other situation which is frying pan to fire. And it is not easy for the new man to live with the old man's children and all that, you know. Why does it come into religion and the scriptures?
Indeed.
Correct. For a very simple reason, my dear, that these scriptures were written by men. No, it's nothing but that. Absolutely nothing more than that. The Hindu recognizes it very easily for, again, a very simple reason. We have what are known as the Puranas. There are 18 of them. There is a Purana called Shiva Purana. If you read that, you will go away with the impression that Shiva is Supreme God. Vishnu and Krishna and all these people were messenger boys. Yes? when we were in Rishikesh, there he was reading that man used to read in Hindi. He was reading Shiva Purana or Linga Purana, and in that, the student is Krishna. Krishna Bhagavan is a student, and he goes to a sage, perhaps Bharadwaja, I don't know, I forgot. This Krishna, Lord Krishna, goes to a sage called Bharadwaja and says, how can I attain salvation? Please give me some hint. And he says, you must worship Shiva. And you must worship Shiva in this manner, in the following manner. And then you come to the Bhagavatam, it's upside down. Shiva is treated as some kind of a foolhardy man. Stupid. And he does all sorts of, he gets into all sorts of difficulties, and Krishna comes and saves him. And every time Krishna saves him, he says, Lord, I surrender at your feet. I have been impetuous, I have been stupid. Please save me from myself. That sort of thing. So, since we are used to that, the Hindu as such is familiar with this. And you go to Devi Mahatmya, Devi Purana, Devi Bhagavatam. There Devi is, the mother is extolled, placed above all, even in this thing called Devi Mahatmya, right? Durga Saptashati. Every time there is a demon or something like that, all these Shiva, Vishnu and all, they go and stand before Durga, the Divine Mother, and say, oh mother, please save us. The Hindu is used to that. The same Hindu whose own personal deity may be a Vishnu will read the Shiva Purana, which exalts Shiva above Vishnu, will read the Devi Mahatmya, which exalts Durga above Vishnu, and read the Bhagavatam, which exalts Vishnu above all the others, and remain untouched. Knowing that this has been written by a devotee of Shiva, and therefore he exalts Shiva. This has been written by a devotee of Durga, the Divine Mother, he exalts the Divine Mother. This has been written by a devotee of Vishnu, and so he exalts Vishnu. I know this, and therefore I am not affected. God is one, and all these people call this same God variously. And therefore, when it comes to the other scriptures also, the ethical and moral and social stuff, we understand immediately. You quote from one place, he will quote from the other place. There is a thing, probably. Yes, you might come across that also, where it says that you must have a male body, and in order to attain salvation, you must have a male body, and you must be born a Brahmin, and if possible, born in a particular place in North India, Benares. How many people can be born there? And then you must have a guru, you must learn the scriptures from him, study the Vedas, and so on. We read this and we don't take any notice of it. I'm sorry, no, my dear, no. I repeat, no. There are scriptures written by women or scriptures that exalt women above all else.
Written by women.
Perhaps. Or devotees of women, let's say. Let's put it that way. Yes, quite. Yeah. Why are you laughing? There is a great saint today in India called Anandamayima. I don't think her devotees would ever write such things, no. Oh no. In what is it? In Yoga Vasishtha or somewhere? There is a woman also is told, or she contemplates what is this wretched body of a man that I am running after? Really filth? Yeah, sure. Hmm?
In the
Bhagavatam. The Bhagavatam? Hmm. Yes, sure, sure. Yes, there are devotees of women.
There's Hamsananda, a devotee of Mother Rani.
Yeah, that's correct. Exactly. Exactly. There can be no superiority or inferiority. You have some faculties, I have some other faculties. I was observing a lunatic once. One of the young men in the ashram lost his mind. And this was in the month of November or December, and it was raining, miserably cold. And this man, being out of his mind, was sitting on the Ganges bank and singing away without practically any clothes, singing and shouting and, you know, gesticulating. I looked at him. Sure, he was mad. But I can't sit like that and sing. Who is superior? Maybe he is superior to me. There is a Swami in the ashram even now, one or two of them. You know them, so I won't mention names. They are considered below par as far as intelligence and efficiency are concerned. But they are donkeys, they can do all, you ask them to do anything, they would do. And you insult them, you abuse them, you scold them, you do what you like with them, they don't care. So, if you have one faculty, which you think entitles you to be superior, I have another faculty which entitles me to be superior in that field. Huh? So why should I consider superior to you just because I have one faculty which you don't have? Why should I not also look into myself and look at you and realize that you have certain faculties which I don't have?
Why is it necessary for me to feel?
Exactly. 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 That is precisely what I don't know. I have no idea at all. I have no idea. Except in the context of the word you used, exploitation. Everybody likes to exploit somebody else. So if I can exploit you, I must immediately try to find out what you are longing for, and see if I can provide that. And at the same time, at least initially, pretend that I don't need what you have. Otherwise, we become equals. Once I have enslaved you, then I can take advantage of you and do what I like with you. It's an unfortunate thing. And this is another quality which makes man inferior to the animals. No animal does it. No animal ever does it. No animal ever takes advantage of another animal, or exploit another animal. The male animal is supposed to be more high, handsome, charming and beautiful and attractive. But that's all. If the female chooses to be attracted, you're welcome. But otherwise there is nothing, there is no exploitation, as in the case of the human being. So.